Welcome to Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. I'm your host, Porter.
And I'm your host, Tyson.
And we're writers, editors, and part-time filmmakers who love superheroes. Welcome to our show. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're covering Superman 3 and our next movie for our Superman watch-through. Tyson, what are your initial thoughts?
This was probably the strangest one we've come across so far.
For sure. And as we've talked in the past, we try to find the best in movies, right? So as long as we end on a positive note, I feel like that would stay in line, you know? Not that, like, this is overwhelmingly going to be negative. It's just there is a lot to critique.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also a lot to enjoy. Like, my first note is that I think that having the credits over a fun Final Destination-esque mischief happening was a good idea. While I think the font and the animations still don't work, I think that it was an improvement to have something going on instead of just being in the darkness of space.
Right. Which we were discussing in the first movie, though, like, the effect that they had on those credits was maybe cool for when it first came out, but it got a little bit old in the second movie, and it's just a strange look. I just don't think it held up over time.
Definitely not. And it's funny how they kind of had the same effect, but they, like, had the text angled a different way each time.
Yeah.
To, like, differentiate it, which is cool, right? But I'm sure it was cool for the time. Not exactly the best thing anymore. But, like, after the credits, we get the opening with Gus Gorman, played by Richard Pryor, who's in the unemployment line. And I think it was a good thing, right? Kind of ground level, like, not superhero-esque or supervillain-esque. And it's a real life problem that someone would have that would lead them to crime, right? Eventually.
Totally.
Or to help out a criminal in his case. Like, obviously the fact that he's down on his luck and he just wants money, it sets up the character. I think it's a well-written sequence, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I agree with that. Well, and it's like the need for money in, like, a very relatable way, right? When you're down on your luck, when you're just, I mean, being a broke college student, you understand kind of the desperation sometimes. It's definitely more relatable than somebody like Mr. Webster, who is, like, already immensely rich, but doesn't need all that, like, crazy money. So his is, like, more greed, whereas, like, Gus's kind of makes sense. You relate to him. You made a point about that.
Yeah, the line, "There's nothing I hate more than greed." And it's like the dude 5 seconds ago was talking about, like, taking over all the oil companies.
They had some great juxtapositions with his dialogue. It made me laugh. Another one I loved was he was getting mad at Gus and he's like, "I tell you to kill Superman and you can't do that one simple thing."
Yeah, seriously.
But yeah, going back to the beginning, I love the way they reintroduce Superman through the photo booth. I thought that was immensely clever because they've kind of had the nods to, like, the telephone booth and, you know, him going through the door carousel and everything like that. But the photo booth I thought was awesome because then he comes out and has, like, the strip of, like, the sequence of him, yeah, like, doing that. And then the kid, like, sees it and he just tears off the last one where he's Superman.
Yeah.
And then runs off.
That is probably the best suit change in the whole franchise so far.
Agreed. Well, and it was the one that needed, like, the least explanation. They have a lot of these, like, animorph sort of phases where, like, he's just running and, like, suddenly he's in his suit.
Right. Kind of that, like, pre-MCU nanobot technology, yeah, just, like, appearing.
Yeah. Which I guess we could just chalk up to another one of his powers.
Yeah, seriously. You said that you had looked up that Gus Gorman is a Superman character or Superman villain that was from the comics, but you said that he was quite different. So, like, what differences did they make, and did you think that it was a good change?
Yeah, so from what I was researching, it seemed like Gus Gorman was a general in the U.S. military.
Okay.
And he kind of headed up a lot of the conflicts that Superman has with the military. That's a pretty reoccurring theme in a lot of the Superman stories, is, like, kind of, you know, his god-tier power compared to, like, the government's, you know, force and wanting to use his power for them, and they tend to butt heads. I like Gus's character in this movie. I guess if they were trying to do like a general like character, I mean, giving him the name, same name and everything, I wish they would have done something different because this was not close to what they described at all. I like the idea of both characters, don't get me wrong. I just think if this is an interpretation of the general, it's not great, even though I do enjoy the character.
Right. It's like, this is a good character, just maybe not the best adaptation of an existing character.
Precisely.
That's fair.
One of the things that I kind of suspension of disbelief that just made me laugh was believing that, you know, Gus couldn't really hack it at a fast food job for more than, was it 28 minutes?
Yeah.
But suddenly he like gets to this like computer startup and like it they were super vague about it, but just like computers and like tech and stuff. And he's just suddenly a whiz at all this and yeah. can hack anything. And it's like, I don't think that's how it works.
Maybe there's a time jump in there, right? Like, who knows? Who knows? Maybe there's like months that pass and he just got really good at it.
Okay, I could give him that.
You are completely justified in being confused. But speaking of computers, like the whole, obviously the whole movie is about computers and maybe about the fear of that rising technology. But the first act of the film, they have a lot of fun ways that they incorporate computers, right? Like they're cutting to computers doing different machines, or they'll be like, hey, you know, a computer can do that now. And they're like, what? That's crazy. It's very, it's kind of a snapshot of the time, right? Of like computers first emerging, because we live in a world now where we have computers more powerful than they had in our pockets or on our wrists. And it's kind of fun to get a reminder of like, this was a huge thing.
Totally. Well, and kind of like where we came from, that like, it would be a surprise and kind of a new development for them. I love that they kind of pushed that into this movie, even though they didn't focus on like a classic Superman villain, like a big and well-known one. They did a really kind of fun job with the premise. I feel like it works well for the time.
Yeah, I agree.
Building up to like this whole sequence with Gus, I love that they have this fire at the chemical plant that feels like a very Superman level disaster. And they have him traveling to back to his hometown for a high school reunion, which is a very kind of classic premise, especially in a lot of sitcoms. Not to say that Superman is a sitcom, but
it's a comedic setup, right? It is. Like there's hijinks that can happen.
Precisely. Anyways, the bus stops, right, because of the fire, and Superman gets off, obviously, and goes to save it. And things start going wrong. He starts saving people, but they're like, we're out of water. We can't do anything. And he's like, where's the nearest lake? And they're like, it's 5 miles away. And he starts flying there. And you and I are like, okay, I mean, how is he going to get the water there?
Yeah, what's his plan here?
And I will say we were both pleasantly surprised. They killed it. They absolutely killed it.
Yeah, that was so cool. Him freezing the lake and then just picking it up and taking it over and making it rain. Like, who knows if that would work on a chemical fire, but it was so fun that you kind of are just whatever, who cares, right? That was such a clever, the whole sequence, right? I mean, they up the stakes with the acid, and which turns out to be a planting, right, for later, but
yeah,
they have the acid that if it boils and it's going to melt through everything and it's going to be a disaster. And they have the little meter telling you how hot it is. And it's a very, very well done sequence. Like, hats off to that. You know,
you make a great point. The rising tension was all there. And I mean, the release of the tension, I was on the edge of my seat for that one. I'm going to be real.
Yeah, definitely didn't know that he would freeze the lake, which was perfectly, it was nice because it was within the powers that they have established, right? It feels like if this were to happen in the first or maybe even the second movie, they would have invented some sort of power for him to solve this problem. And this one, it felt great because it was a power that had been established as cold breath. And we got to see him utilize it to solve a problem in a way that we didn't think of.
Right. Right. Which I think is brilliant on the writer's part and something that we can hopefully look forward to in other movies. It is kind of almost disconcerting when they just kind of toss in a new power where you're just like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's a shout out to the kiss in number two.
Seriously. But,
And after the chemical fire, we have them pulling up on the high school dance, which was sort of a fun sequence to see, like, adult Clark back in his, like, I guess, nerdy high school elements. Another part of that, right, is kind of that angst of trying to, like, show your peers that you've made something of yourself. And we all know he's Superman, right? Like, he's kind of a big deal, but, you know, he's playing it as just a small town reporter, or, you know, big city reporter.
Yeah, I think Christopher Reeves plays the dorky Clark Kent very well in this movie.
Masterfully.
He has to play it the most, I think. Like, Superman does not show up a lot in the first half of this movie. It's almost exclusively Clark Kent. And it shows. Like, he really pulls it off. He's very awkward and at his high school reunion. Wouldn't we all be, right? And the reintroduction of Lana Lang was, I think, a good idea. I mean, I'm kind of glad that Lois was more out of the picture in this one, because while I appreciate and respect the dynamic of Lois Lane and Superman, after the second one where we discussed them spending so much time developing that relationship to have the memory wiped, we were kind of like, okay, what's going to happen next? Like, how are they going to keep this interesting? And I think it was the right move to just get Lois Lane somewhere else and develop a new relationship.
Totally. And I think just in general, they did a fantastic job with plantings and payoffs in this movie. A lot of them that you just felt very involved in, and you're able to be like, oh, that mattered.
Yeah.
But yeah, just even that sequence in the beginning where we got the bingo balls, which has, like, the machine later on, which is kind of a big deal.
Right.
We got the couple winning the vacation at the company, and then Lois telling Clark that she's going on a vacation of her own. All three of those things, you know, kind of showed up in their own way later on, and were set up in kind of just a short little scene in the beginning.
Yeah, you're right.
I thought the high school jock was an interesting character. Kind of brought him back. He was a bit of a jerk in the first movie, but like a non-factor, because they kind of sped past that whole Smallville high school feel. He played a little bit of a bigger role in this one.
Yeah, he even interacts with the villain, right?
Yeah.
Because as we've talked about with Gus, he is a sympathetic villain. Like, he's a very normal person that just wants to get by, and he has talents. Unfortunately, someone is exploiting him. And of course, he would know how to kind of be on the same level as the bully when he has to break in, right? He's like, I know these kinds of people, where someone like Webster probably wouldn't know. He would probably just be like, let me in or else, right? He's not going to really get creative with it. But yeah, back to the bully. I couldn't help but feel like this movie gave me the dose of Smallville that was severely lacking in the first Superman, as far as hometown dynamics, like what that was like growing up there, what other people thought of Clark Kent being a little strange. That was all missing from the first movie, and we kind of got that in this one.
You're totally right.
Like, I think the conversations with Lana about the kinds of people that stick around and how she wants to leave and how he made such a good decision going to the big city. I truly believe that it was I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it was a smart move to go back to Smallville.
Totally. Kind of have him reconnect to his roots, and possibly even realizing that they made a mistake in the first movie, kind of rushing past that so quickly. It was fun to get him back in his elements a little bit. This might be jumping the gun, but I do want to discuss this, like, haphazard sort of marriage that happened between Clark and Lana and Super. Yeah. Can we break that down?
Yeah. So he, like, gives her a ring towards the end of the movie, and it's hard to tell, like, he didn't propose. He was just kind of like, oh, this is a nice ring, right? It's a diamond ring.
Right.
But he obviously loves her in a very special way. I don't know if it was proposing, though, right? Because if It was funny though how like he had to kneel down to clean up the mess, and then the bully walks in, and that was all very funny. But yeah, and then I guess at the very end it's like, oh yeah, the new secretary's going to dinner with Clark, so like, and it's Lana as the new secretary. I guess we'll wait till the fourth one to see what really happened there.
It did seem like maybe a clever way to set up a sort of love triangle. Like there could be maybe some tension between Lois and Lana and Clark, or maybe right. It won't be as easy or as linear if Clark is wanting Lois again. Right. Cause like we said, we're not sure how they're trying to set up this new dynamic with Lois, and I think removing her for a movie kind of helped them reset it overall. But that was a funny sequence, you're right, with the bully, and then once again with Lois in the end, where she kind of sees the rock on Lana's finger and she's like, Clark gave it to me, and she's like, wow.
Yeah, that was the right way to up the antics for the next movie, right? Instead of it just being Lois, now it's Lois and Lana. And neither of us have seen the fourth one. So, like, what if there's a situation where the bad guy's like, you must choose Superman, would be a good thing, right? That'd be a clever way to build danger and suspense. But speaking of Lana, you kind of pointed out how you liked it. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought that is so smart, was when the dog was in the field and they were kind of having the picnic and it started barking and you kind of saw the sound waves hitting Superman. That was a good visual representation of something that we already knew. So like, yeah, if we heard like light barking in the distance, like, yeah, we would have gotten the same effect, but it was so much more fun this way.
Totally. And akin to like Spider-Man's Spidey sense, it's showing totally. Us that they're sensing something that the people around them aren't, which I think is great. And the way they did that visually was neat.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And it was kind of fun to get to see Clark interacting with Lana and her kid. I loved the sequence at the bowling alley when he begins his like sequence of kind of standing up to the bully a little bit. Because the bully is trying to get with Lana a little bit and honestly kind of stepping on the kid's toes, because you can tell he's maybe not great with other kids and Clark feels for him in that way. But
yeah,
where he's showing the kid how to bowl and he's like, just do your thing, you can do it. And he goes to bowl it and Clark like does the fake sneeze and it shatters all of the pins.
Yeah, that was a fun sequence.
Freaking love that. And it just kind of goes to show that little sticking up for the little guy energy that Clark has.
Never gets old.
It never gets old. And a little interesting tidbit that we caught, Lana calling Metropolis the Big Apricot. That was something that we saw in Harley Quinn as well. And we finally decided to look it up. And that is like an official coin term.
Yeah.
For Metropolis, I guess like an akin to the Big Apple, their version of New York is just apricot. That's such a strange fruit to go with.
Yeah, I remember us thinking like, oh, it's probably like a joke, right? Because the first time we'd heard it was in Harley Quinn, which is a joking show like that. And then she said it in this one, and yeah, you're right. We were like, wait a minute.
Yeah, kind of fun that's like canonical.
So yeah, kind of moving on to like the midpoint. So somehow they create kryptonite. That was a rushed sequence. They didn't really explain that.
It had a fun buildup. I'll hand them that. They had Gus breaking into the computer and the different little hijinks that happened as he tried to lock onto the satellite.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with like the...
We got like the guy getting all the extra money at the ATM.
Yeah,
the other guy getting the crazy...
With the Columbia thing.
Yeah, the guy getting the crazy credit card debt and wishing the grapefruit in his wife's face. And then that fun little car walking sequence where like the lights were going crazy and nobody knew what to do.
Yeah, you're right. Like their initial plan that Superman foils, that was a very fun sequence.
But you're totally right that it was very poorly explained after that. It was just assumed that they have control of the satellite and there's supposedly meteorites of kryptonite somewhere in space. And then it was like, boom, we have kryptonite. And it was like, whoa.
Yeah, and then it's like they find out that it's not exact, but then later they're like, oh, we were able to actually make it, right? The writers didn't care too much about the kryptonite, which, whatever, you know, but okay, so this is where, for me, up until this point, I really was quite enjoying this movie. Like, it was all positives. Like, I was like, they're really taking what happened in Superman 2 and just going a different direction, and it's working for me. And then for me personally, once they gave the kryptonite to Superman and he turned evil, for me, that is just where it started to dip.
It was confusing, to say the least. We all understand that it, you know, weakens or dampens his powers, but this weird, like, half-hearted bizarro world Superman was, it was a little off-putting. Like, it didn't make sense to, like, me as a comic book fan, and I can't imagine, you know, what, like, a regular audience member would be thinking.
Yeah, I mean, they have him grow out his facial hair a little bit. His suit gets a slightly different color scheme, kind of more Man of Steel-esque, like you pointed out.
Yeah, the darker red. You noted he had like just a tiny bit of eyeliner, just kind of like dampening his hue overall.
Yeah, and then they had the montage of him like putting people in danger and doing like evil things.
Yeah.
Which was a fun contrast to the other movies where he's doing montages of good things. But I think the hard part is that just some of the lines, right? Like when the girl's trying to get Superman like on top of the Statue of Liberty, he shows up and he's like, I hope you're not hoping to be saved. I don't do that kind of thing anymore.
We both laughed really hard.
Like, what?
That kind of, yeah, it felt very out of place. I mean, the energy for one, but also like that kind of language, like it was unbecoming.
But like while he's being evil, there's like this sub-villain plot going on where Webster's like, oh yeah, you can have whatever you want, Gus. And he's like, I want a supercomputer that can do anything. And they're like, okay, we'll do it. But it's also going to help us kill Superman. And they decide to build it in the Grand Canyon, which is fun because we grew up near there. So like the landscape was like, oh, hey, look at that, right? But the whole like third act was kind of messy,
to say the least. It did feel kind of chaotic and disorganized. And holy cow, I mean, the whole sequence of them trying to take down Superman was just, it was just atrocious. I'm sorry.
Like, right, with like the pixelated, like asteroids looking.
Yeah, and maybe that was like a fun effect trying to like simulate, right, what the computer would be seeing or whatnot, but it just looked kind of like a 8-bit video game, kind of a garbage simulation.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of discussed it a little bit while we were watching it, but we're like, all the things this computer does is so ridiculous to us, but maybe like this came out in the very early 80s and computers weren't mainstream, so like no one really did know what their capabilities were. So obviously in, you know, fantasy movie world, it can do anything, right? Kind of like you pointed out today when we have AI in movies, where it's like, maybe that's not plausible right now, but we're expanding our fantasies of what it could be.
Right. I mean, watching the new Mission Impossible, the AI is starting to like take over things and go all crazy across the internet and everything. And talking to a couple people, just, I mean, even minor degrees in like computer science, like, yeah, that's not super how it works, but all right.
Right.
So you make a great point that for the time there was probably just a severe lack of knowledge around it. I mean, which could be clearly seen just by the way they talked about computers, as like literally just calling it computer stuff. Like it was very basic.
Yeah, like I guess like we said before, it's a fun snapshot of what people thought computers were and their familiarity with it back in the day. But going back to the Grand Canyon supercomputer, they have the sequence where Superman's in trouble, but Gus destroys the computer because he tries to do the right thing and it breaks it down. But then I feel like it could have ended there, right? Where like Superman could have done like, they could have done a lot of different things to try and help Superman, or Superman could have literally taken him out so easily. But what they decided to do worked for a time where, like I said, he decides to do the right thing, you know, lesson learned. But then it keeps going and the computer gets a mind of its own. They turn the sister into a robot lady, and it just really, it just keeps going.
You make a good point that it keeps going. It reminded me a little bit of watching Into the Woods, and they like finally make it off the beanstalk, and like you're like, okay, like it's, they won, right? And then there was like an hour left of the movie, and I was like, that felt unnecessary. Anyways, it was akin to that where like they kind of had like the complete arc for the sort of villain. We knew that, you know, Mr. Webster was like the big villain and he was going to get his justice. They didn't super need to introduce like the scary computer AI villain. You mentioned Terminator at one point, and it definitely gave those vibes, right? The computer kind of taking over. It sucked in Webster's sister at one point and made her like this really crazy cyborg, which had like a really weak fight with Superman.
Well, yeah, I mean, even with something like Into the Woods, where it kind of has that like fourth act, at least in that case, it was doing like more character work, right? Or doing whatever it needed to do for what they felt like the story should go. But in this, it just felt like, oh, we're going to have like another set piece, but it's going to take place in the same place. And all that's changed is instead of Superman having to stop a normal bad guy, it's a computer. So I guess like, again, like he couldn't beat it with brute strength. So we brought up, he brings the acid from the chemical fire at the beginning, which he heats up and, you know, just in the nick of time is able to make it corrosive and it melts through everything and it destroys it. So again, it's a fun case of he was able to solve the problem by using his wits, which I did appreciate. But man, like, it would have been cooler if Gus like just broke the kryptonite beam and then Superman was like, oh, I have this acid, and then it goes from there, and then it's just done, right? We don't have the whole extra 15, 20 minute bit where he's fighting a supercomputer with arms and yeah.
Yeah. And the way that like the AI worked was almost like in this new movie Y2K way, where like it all just kind of mushes together in like a not very computer-esque way, and it just kind of molds like almost like a Clayface-esque, but like just with hardware. It was an interesting fight, but you're totally right. It felt like half an act where they tried to like continue the climax almost, or add another on top, and it just felt unnatural.
Yeah, unnatural is a good word for it. So before we get to our wrapping up, you know, final thoughts, right? I really wonder what your thoughts are around Webster, and I wonder if when they were writing this, like beginning of writing it, they were hoping to get Gene Hackman back as Lex Luthor to play the billionaire, and they just had to insert a new billionaire, which works, right? Like it's, he plays the part. He has a very fun layer, but I couldn't help but think like this would feel more natural from a Superman perspective if this was Lex Luthor.
Most definitely. Well, and the energy was very much the same. And when it came to like nefarious plots that just ended in him getting rich, right? Nothing with like world domination or specifically taking down Superman, right? I mean, Lex originally just wanted beachfront property.
Yeah, it feels very in line with like, I just want to own all the coffee bean companies and also all of the oil, right? You're right. The plans align. It's like, I wonder if there is something we could Google, but we don't look up much before going into these. We try to go in blind, so who knows? Maybe there is a big thing, and if so, we will maybe bring it up next time when we have more time to research. But
I mean, reading the description, I remember just before we watched it, it said something about like a computer genius and then like a tech billionaire. And we were like, is this like a Brainiac Lex Luthor like combo? Is this gonna like go crazy? Wouldn't we have like heard about this before?
Yeah.
And we get into it and it's just like a couple of like no names who are like, oh.
Yeah, definitely bold choice for supervillains. I think the Gus Gorman thing works. I think the Webster thing serves its purpose, but you can't help but feel like it was meant for Lex Luthor.
Totally. And just another maybe controversial topic. What are your thoughts on the physical representation of the Clark versus Superman battle? Like they kind of had a really interesting way of showing, you know, this evil Superman that was doing all the bad stuff, like battling it out with his like better half, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it was probably the most like on the nose way to be like, guess what? He has like an inner struggle, and it works, right? Like it's fun. It's kind of like a Pixar short-esque like representation of something like that. I think at the beginning it's fun and it works. But then as we discussed while watching it, it just keeps happening and they keep fighting.
Like for a long time.
Yeah.
It. The ending. He's
like, I know. And the way he defeats him is by having like the worst chokehold ever on evil Superman. And that makes him disappear. But like throwing him into a pile of metal doesn't do anything. It's not consistent, but the message gets across.
Right. He defeats the evil Superman. And then suddenly he's good again. I think that once again was another layer in kind of this muddy, like kryptonite kind of turned him from his good side, but he can just like think, battle it out, sort of real battle it out. And it's like all good. It just didn't make a lot of sense. It felt too artsy for a Superman film.
Totally.
Worth a watch, I would say, this movie.
Definitely. I think it's, for me, it's probably on par quality-wise with the original. But you kind of have to give the original an edge for being the first one. But
right.
You're right. It's perfectly watchable. You'll have a good time with it. You'll get some good laughs. Intentional and unintentional.
Totally. Which, I mean, with any great 80s movie, that's just how it works.
Yeah, that's the law.
But yeah, ending on a couple of like more positive things. One thing that I thoroughly enjoyed was the sequence with the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Oh, that was golden.
Having the evil Superman straighten it out. Like that is the most like nefarious thing he could do as an evil person.
Totally.
And having like the reaction, right, of the vendor in the front, like smashing all of his towers because the tower just keeps changing.
Yeah, that was a super fun sequence. I'm so glad they put that in there.
Totally. And I mean, you know, good Superman lining up on the cosmic scale. Of course, he would have to, you know, fix his wrong, but that it would still like do somebody dirty. He was the only one that lost in the end, was that poor vendor.
Seriously.
And then another thing that I loved was I was kind of rolling my eyes when they introduced I believe it was Mr. Webster's assistant, kind of the classic 80s bimbo lady.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just wearing like the really like revealing like tops that are really bright and colorful and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, making her out to just be kind of dumb and caring only about, you know, frilly, whatever, right? Just making it a very two-dimensional character. And I was like, wow, they are leaning into that. And they leaned into it for a reason.
Yeah, they had the bit where no one else is in the room and she's like reading hardcore philosophy. And then when the other people enter the room, she like hides the book and like pulls up like a fashion magazine and like goes back to like her fake voice. And it is such a clever thing because not only is it funny, but it also kind of, like you've mentioned, it added a lot to her character, like on a surprisingly deep level of being like she feels like she can't be her true self around these types of people.
Right. And it kind of plays on our expectations that she's gonna stay two-dimensional and kind of giving her that extra edge. I also love that bit in the end where the machine starts going haywire and she like perfectly describes what's going wrong with the machine. She's like, oh, I understand. and like lists off all like the parts that are like breaking or whatever. And the sister turns to her and is like, what?
Yeah, that was great. She was definitely a surprise highlight character.
So yeah, kind of a fun arc for her. A little bit like the assistant in the first movie who kind of had like a come around. Yeah, it seems like really only the billionaires are the bad guys in these ones.
Seriously.
The original Eat the Rich movies.
Yeah, no kidding.
But wow, guys, that was fun. I enjoyed watching that one, and I appreciate you guys joining us for our review of it. We hope to catch you guys next week for our review of Superman 4, supposedly the worst one. We
will see. We're going in super blind.
We've heard a couple of reviews, and we're trying to like just stay out of it, keep an open mind, but supposedly, I'm looking forward to it. I got to be honest.
Me too.
But yeah, thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.